Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
What's good, internet? It is July 28th, 2017, and you are listening to Waypoint Radio. It is episode 83. I'm joined here in Brooklyn by Danielle Rienda.
Hi, how's it going?
Also by Patrick Klepek.
Hello.
In Brooklyn. Sadly, not in Brooklyn, on the internet. And also Rob Zachney. How is it going, Rob?
Just enjoying a beautiful week in Boston, my friend.
Did you steal that cup from the office?
I think he did.
Wait, did you steal that cup from the office?
Look at this cup. Look at this cup.
Did you steal that shit? Which office? Did you steal that from our office or from LA? Tell me the truth. All right, just give me a blink. Give me a left blink if it's LA. Give me a right blink if it's New York.
Which his left or your left?
I don't know. I just want to know he's not taking my cups. That's all.
That's what it was.
No.
Take LA cups.
Straight out of Los Angeles. Straight from Venice Beach.
Mm-hmm.
Fuck LA.
Fuck LA.
Not like Vice LA. I just mean.
No, LA is. I don't like LA as a place.
Yeah, me either.
It's too big. Sorry. Natalie is just like, I sensed Natalie looking over at us. It's so sprawling.
Feliz is cool. I'm not saying parts of LA are fine. I'm saying that as a general principle, fuck LA. Like, Los Feliz is great. Santa Monica is great. Echo Park is great.
Santa Monica is great? Jesus, God.
It's a jealousy. There's a jealousy here, as a touristy place to go.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to live in Santa Monica.
Well, humans can't live in Santa Monica.
It's not habitable. That's just because Airbnb billionaires bought all of Santa Monica and are slowly running it off. That's actually true. My beef with LA is that it doesn't do what I want from it. It does parts of what I like from cities, which is like really good food, good museums, like good culture in general, like. But the big thing that I want from a city is the ability to get from one of those places to another without having to own a car.
So.
Okay.
Right. Well, I guess I do.
Well, we're in that currently in New York City.
Yes, there is a moment right now.
Actually.
Yes. That is
New York
not
is
great.
Not serving us in that capacity
but
right
it,
now.
But it is built to when
it's
when
supposed
it's,
to.
Right.
Yes.
And like the base infrastructure is there so that it could and it is geographically compressed as a city so that that makes sense.
With twice the population of LA.
Right.
I don't think it's half the space, but it's a much smaller amount of the space.
I'm so sure it is way less than half the space. LA is
real big.
LA is huge. LA is like a state. Like, it's huge.
I'm from Rhode Island. So give it to me in Rhode Island terms.
Right. Los Angeles.
Rhode Island is about 120 square miles, I think.
Wait, are you just Googling Los Angeles sucks?
Yeah, so it's size.
That's just going to redirect to San Francisco, like tourist board.
Yeah. So Rhode Island is
1212 square miles.
503 is LA.
Oh, my.
Your state is only twice as big as the city of Los Angeles. This is what I mean.
Holy shit.
According to this, anyway. According to this quick bad search we just did.
Yeah. Let's do New York.
It's just so much. It's just. I'm not saying the MTA is great.
Hey, New York City's 304.
Okay.
So it's not quite half.
Yeah, but think about
it.
Close to it. Yeah, but, no, like,
close.
Real talk, no one's going to Staten Island, dog. Like,
that's true.
It just doesn't count.
You got like,
to. What we're talking about is basically
the four boroughs that matter.
and being real, and I'm not shit talking the Bronx. Like, shout outs to the Bronx, DeZemero, shout outs, like, y'all right there, Bodega Boys.
Catherine Cross lives in the Bronx.
We know
good people. Good
Yusuf
people.
Yusuf Cole, who wrote a great piece for us this week, shout outs to the Bronx. But most people aren't going to the Bronx to visit. Like, I live in Queens. I work in Brooklyn. I occasionally go in, fuck Manhattan, but also I occasionally have to go to Manhattan for some reason.
Same.
But
well,
like,
but it's reverse, exactly.
And so, there is the ability to do that in a way that does not ever mean that I get into a car. And also, that means I can do it late at night. And that ended up being the big thing for me when I was out in LA was like, oh, this cool thing is happening out in Echo Park or whatever. And like, okay, I'm going to get there. I'm going to probably get drunk. And then I'm going to have to pay for a car to get home. And then a car to get my car or whatever, right? Like, that's the setup of that city.
Yeah.
And you can't just walk to a grocery store. Like, there's all – that's the stuff. That's, like, the daily life stuff of, like, I love where I live because I can get to a grocery store. I can get to a laundromat. I can get to, like, key stuff. I could walk to a doctor. I could walk – you know, like, all of that part of – is what I like from cities. And I'm not saying that that's the only way to live. Like, I grew up in a suburban area. I've lived in areas that are, like, really boring and empty and enjoyed them in a sense, like, because they offer other things. But the thing I want from a city is the ability to explore it, like, by myself on foot. And, like, I just don't get that in L.A. And it's fine. I get that other people like it. I get it.
Are we still talking about L.A.?
I had a lot on my chest to get off, Patrick.
I'm pretty sure I blacked out.
Sorry. It's been right here. It's a beautiful city. How's everybody been doing this week? It's been a long week.
Well, there's two answers.
Doing better this morning.
Okay.
Yeah. There's two answers to that.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm in this weird situation where, like, my life is pretty fucking awesome. Uh-huh. However, the world we live in feels like it's falling apart a little bit more every day.
Every day is a hard
time. Those are the two answers. Like, my life's going okay with a whole lot of anxiety for the world that is falling apart.
Did you stay up and watch the votes last night?
I was on my ambulance last night. I was on my volunteer ambulance seeing patients in between tweeting and being like, oh my God, you know, like freaking out, looking at Twitter. And then I was like, oh wait, I gotta go into the ER and help a emotionally distressed patient. So that was a weird experience.
I bet. What was the, like, attitude of people, other EMTs, about all this? Are they
freaking
not even
out? Yeah. Honestly, like, obviously there's a lot more. I will say this. There is a very wide political spectrum. I work at a volunteer ambulance agency, and there's a tremendous – there's a lot of Trump supporters. There's a lot of leftists. There's a lot of everything in between. So the people I was riding with last night, it was more – just holy God, we can't. This is going to be a mess. Healthcare workers in general, doctors, like every major organization
The
healthcare
AMA
workers
came out, I think, last night with a thing saying, like, fuck the
this is
the skinny
terrible.
Or the skinny
pediatrics association, like, are like, this is really bad. People need health insurance. People need preventative care. People need these things to live healthy lives in an industrialized society. So healthcare workers as a whole are incredibly against repealing healthcare. Shocker.
Yeah.
So yeah, people were just kind of freaking out in general.
Yeah.
So
what a weird night. Patrick and I were up late. I think you may have seen tweeting.
Yeah.
We were definitely feeling the fatigue. And shout outs to anybody who was out there doing more than tweeting, obviously, who was making phone calls. I know a lot of people were in DC out on the fields out in front.
It was one of those moments when I was seeing the videos were like, if reporters inside were saying that they could hear the chanting from outside. I was like, one of those, like, I love being a dad. I love my child, but, like, I can't just go get on a plane and make an impulse and, like, I'm just going to go get in it.
So
good on everyone that was able to either traveled or
make calls or send postcards and put pressure.
If I can
stay engaged.
ResistBot is a really good tool in case people are phone shy or, you know, just have issues with calling if you're at work. ResistBot is a really cool tool on Twitter that will help you fax and call your senators and your representatives and so on and so forth. Whew. Just saying.
One of those things that I always think it's interesting for us because obviously we're always thinking about politics here at Waypoint. Like, we're all people who are engaged with that stuff. And it's interesting to see when the events of the world are such that we cannot help but weigh in. Like, we have to get it out of our systems. We have to say out loud, like, oh, I feel relief because of this thing. Or, oh, I'm stressed about it because this certain things are just, like, that big. And it's been one of those weeks with a lot of those things. So,
and it's easy to tie that back into things like pieces we've written about the ACA and how it's been a boon for smaller developers.
Right. I think that's one of those things that, like, it's amazing.
We can easily make those connections our specific
– that piece not that long ago. Right. The piece that you're talking about was written by Joseph Knoop, who's a freelancer who we work with. And it's about what Obamacare has done inside of the games industry in terms of opening up possibility for independent developers to actually go out on their own and kind of take risks. You know, having that social safety net means that they're able to be entrepreneurs and be experimental and be, you know, kind of artists who are able to do things that they would normally never do because they would restrict themselves to working at big, you know, publishers, big developers that could provide healthcare, that could offer that stability. And it's amazing because we ran that piece a couple of months ago. And I, you know, I edited that piece. I was hands-on with that piece. And then I saw someone else make the same point the other day. And I was like, that's a good point. And I was like, wait, yeah, I know that point already. We ran that story.
You wrote about that.
yeah. But, like, it's one of those things that is a reminder that with these things, with politics, we're always in this mode of, I think maybe this is just life. I often feel like, oh, we got to get a win. But, like, no, you need to string together, like, progress. Like, a win is never, like, sports is a really good metaphor for a lot of things, but also there is no championship. They're like, oh, we did it. We're done. Swish. I'm out. Here's right. the ring. And, you know, maybe sports is a good metaphor because there's always another season. There's always, you always have to come back and keep pushing.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's like, it's worth saying, like last night, you know, the defense of a flawed, compromise, health bill that needs lots of changes. Like, but it is a victory.
And, it
like,
is a victory.
It's okay to relish Absolutely. In that, especially in 2017. Given how many setbacks that are completely out of our
yep.
control, right? Like things like that was happening with like, you know, the transgender yep. Military personnel, like that is out of our control. Activists can maybe
can put pressure, but
you cannot, like that is just on Trump. And there's yep. just not much we can do about that. But like this was something which activists participate in, like pressured. And it like the defense of something that was flawed is still a victory, especially in the context and the environment we're in. So it is okay to sit back and go, yes, like there's so much more to do and there's so much more to change, but it's okay to feel good about what happened
yeah,
last night.
Totally. Rob, were people in Boston excited that they've that old Romney Care is still around?
That old Romney Care.
I mean, it definitely it comes up a fair bit though, because there is like this degree of relief that like our system exists kind of independently of right. the ACA. And so there is kind of this like relief that to a degree you're on like the proverbial liberal island, mm-hmm. where there's a lot of things that can affect other parts of the country, but like Massachusetts has sort of built some redundancies, into its own safety net. On the other hand, like not all the people we love and care for are here in Massachusetts. Like, you know, I've got family back in Indiana, which has become,
right.
You know, kind of a right wing hellscape in some ways. And so I'm a little concerned for, you know, my aging parents, you know, as the insurance market sort of changes around them. And that's a, you know, a very real and present worry, on my mind a lot yeah. these days.
It's wild. Like, yeah.
Yeah. It's terrifying, because it's yet another thing to dread. I think like it's for me, you know, coming at this out of, you know, I graduated into a bad job market. Then I did a lot of freelancing. Like there's always been a pretty intense level of dread about just finances, but particularly like insurance, and healthcare. And that is starting to ease a little bit. Like my finances and career have sort of stabilized in the last few years. And just as that's happening, you know, other family stuff is starting to come up, like, you know,
yep.
different phase of life.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like this, I would really enjoy relief from the gnawing dread that attends a lot of American life. Uh-huh. And I think uh-huh. that maybe is what this fight is ultimately about for me to an extent, is that there's so many people living, feeling like there's this sort of fucking Damocles yep. over their heads. And if we can remove that, then that's not just good policy, but it's also like a human kindness.
Yep. It's weird too. Like, I think, you know, we are a video game podcast. We are a video game website that obviously has a political bent. And we have had a really busy week here doing stuff that we think is really important. We've been doing a series called At Play in the Carceral State, which looks at games and their place in relation to prisons and prison culture. We've sent a reporter to Gitmo. We're doing all this stuff that is very important, I believe, truly academically, intellectually. You know, we're running essays about, you know, what our superhero fantasies mean when it comes to our understanding of criminal justice. We have an essay going up today by Cameron, that you're in the middle of editing.
Yep.
That seems really good.
It's awesome.
About imagining kind of a world, where we could re-envision what we mean when we say criminal justice.
Basically,
or incarceration.
Abolishing a lot of our current notions of what prison is.
Exactly.
And looks like. Yeah.
And that stuff is great. And also, we still have to walk the line of like, and now we're going to do a Battleground stream. And I'm going to go, yeehaw, let's blow up that fucking car. And it can be so
go
weird.
Go to the crate.
God damn it, Patrick. We had a breakfast in Battlegrounds
go
today.
Go to the crate.
Where Patrick went to the crate. He did a very Austin Walker movie. He channeled your old dad, who is me, for people who weren't caught up. I'm Patrick's father, by the way, in this scenario. And we went for a crate that we shouldn't have. And we paid the ultimate price. We paid the ultimate price.
A waste of time.
Totally. But there's this thing that's weird, which is like, I want, like, one of the questions I think has come up while we're doing this series on the carceral state, the thing that comes up whenever we talk about politics in general is like, how do you square both writing goofy stuff about video games? How do you square writing about NAC2 memes in Splatoon and also late night politics tweeting and then talking about it on the podcast? And it's tough because on one hand, the thing I want us to do is to make our coverage more political and more engaged with the wider world, less siloed. One of my big problems with games coverage in general, one of my problems with entertainment coverage in general is that it is built to be very siloed. It happens, you pay attention to games coverage to pay attention to games coverage. You pay attention to the movies coverage to pay attention about movies. And like, it's rare that you have an outlet that does crossover stuff or that extends past whatever that medium is, that entertainment medium. So one, I want to do that. But like, the other thing is like, I want to be able to also be fucking goofy. Like, I want that. That is the thing that I want the most. And for we've talked about YouTube culture and stuff like that before, where it's like, these are the things that you have to do to be successful as a streamer, as a YouTuber, etc. And it's often like, be super goofy and never have that serious side. And the thing if there is a political mission for Waypoint, it's like forcing those two things together to where the same people who you're going to laugh at because they did a flip in a Doom buggy in fucking Battlegrounds are then going to have some thoughts about, you know, the ACA. So it's been one of those weeks that's like been trying, but also I think has been positive overall for what we're trying to do here. And we've thankfully at least ended. So who knows? It's Friday. There could be a 5 p.m. surprise. We have no idea what could happen today. But
I mean, that's life too, though, isn't
it? Yes,
life is goofy and incredibly serious, and it's every kind of thing. So yeah, I think getting away from sort of artificial boundaries that we put on things is always a positive.
Yeah, we'll see. Anyway, video games.
Video games.
I've been playing a game about trying to maintain some stability in a world that's falling apart, in which you're surrounded by soulless husks who have no regard for human life, in which you and a small group of people can kind of look out for others and try to toss together some sort of bastion of defense against an outside world that is ambivalent to your existence. It's called Fortnite.
I thought you were going to be like, it's called Working in America.
It's called Fortnite. I'm playing Fortnite. Fortnite came out. All right. Fortnite had become one of those games that was like, not quite Duke Nukem Forever. Not quite, what are some other games that are like, where we've been waiting forever? Not quite Cuphead. Maybe a little bit Cuphead.
It's maybe a little bit Cuphead. Like, it was this game that, was first announced when Epic Games was going through like a strange transition, you know, where they got a majority stake or a minority stake from a Chinese, you know, company. Like, a lot of their designers left. Like, essentially, like, they closed the chapter on, or closed the book on Gears of War.
Right.
And people thought, like, oh, well, they'll just go and make another one of those games, you know, a new series. And instead, it seemed for a while, like, well, maybe they're just going to be an engine company. And Fortnite was kind of kicking around for the last couple of years. Like, you'd see, like, private betas going around, and then Epic would say, no, it's still in development.
Uh-huh.
And then other people, and then it'd be like, well, what could they possibly be working on for this long? And then finally, I mean, it seems like it went through a bunch of iterations before it kind of has become the thing that it is now. And it's now in early access, but you can buy, I think, a boxed copy of it.
Of
that game.
Can you?
That might be wrong.
Okay. I've put, like, 12, 15 hours into it. It's one of those things that I've been like, that's kind of crept up on me a little bit. So that game came out. It feels like they were playing Gears of War Horde mode and were like, there's a whole game here. Let's keep building on top of this. And so it's like, the basic premise is you have, oh God, okay. The basic premise is it's a horde mode game. It's a cooperative game, which you and up to three other people, have missions to do in these big maps where you're out in the countryside or in a city and there are zombies that come. And basically every match is, not every match, but a lot of them center around this kind of horde mode thing of like, okay, quickly build, or not quickly, you build up a base around a central point that you have to defend. But the thing that I didn't understand, like, you know, you set down traps, you put up different barricades, you kind of figure out like, okay, the zombies are going to come from this direction. There's a bunch of different enemy types. Some of them are like really good at destroying your fortifications. Some of them are really like tough and strong. You know, it's the thing
different
that you
classes,
imagine.
Different classes, basically, yeah.
Right. At that point of it, yeah, different classes, like, oh, this guy does summons a big chain gun. This person can put down a turret. This person can, you know, gets extra loot when they loot stuff. They all have abilities and you level them up and there's tons of gear and crafting equipment or crafting items and all that. It's a lot of what you think it is. But the thing that's really unique about it that I did not expect is the pace at which it plays. I thought it would be like Gears of War Horde mode where you just like, boom, you're in it. And now the zombies are coming and quickly throw up some defenses and you have some time before you hit the button or whatever, but that's it. But instead it's these like, not big open worlds, but like sizable maps that you then are given lots of time to explore. And there's secrets, there's little hidden dungeons, there's little like secret chests hidden in the weird corners.
I just perked up.
Yeah, there's like, so like for instance, and a lot of it's tied into the progression mechanics, right? So like the way this game works isn't that you get drops and you get a gun, it's you get a rare schematic. And so like, oh, I got the schematic for this light machine gun. I really need copper. Let's go to a map where we're going to be like in the suburbs or out in the like the countryside where I know I'll probably be able to find like a little hidden mine somewhere, go down there, find the copper I need to then build this gun at some point. And like, that's not what I thought that game would be. I didn't think I'd ever be like, oh, hey guys, come over here. There's like a weird secret door that I just found. There could be like a whole underground facility over here. I thought it was just build these walls, fight these zombies. And it's that other part that's actually really engaging and fun. I'm really enjoying it. It's dense. The UI is a nightmare. There's like.
Yeah, the UI is bad.
The UI is bad.
No. Is it bad?
Not the mid gameplay UI. The mid like fighting UI is fine, but what's bad is like the interstitial stuff when you're back at base. There's like huge skill trees that are not laid out in a way that communicates where you should be focusing. The way that it kind of tutorializes you by mission to mission doesn't always make clear what the overall structure of the game is. The UI is like legitimately bad. My suggestion right now is to kind of power through that until you hit a point. There's kind of like five missions in a row or six missions in a row where it's like, do this mission, do this mission, do this mission. And then the mission type changes to where it's like, it's not go here and do this. It's in the next time that you do one of this style of mission, you need to find five videotapes that are scattered throughout the world. I know your platformer sense just started tingling.
I'm like, that sounds fun. I want to collect shit and
so
run around.
You know, we're like, oh, hey, do a mission in this setting in the cities and rescue seven people. And so like, the missions end up becoming these things that are very daily, very MMO-y. You know what I mean? Like, oh, go do X of Y, like, you know, things. And it is a surprising shift. And like, my understanding is the end game to that game. What I heard someone describe it as was, everything you play through the main missions of Fortnite are like the single player of Chrome Hounds back in the day. And that the post game is like the real game. Like, okay, I'm training through by doing the single player things. I'm understanding what the game is. But once you get through the missions is when the game really opens up and like becomes what the thing is. And I can already start to see a lot of those things. This is not a game where it's like, I have no idea what that post game might look like. Now I do. And it seems like a perfect podcast game, a perfect game where I just want to like go home and like chill out with a friend and fuck around for 45 minutes in a map. When I say the pacing is like longer, that's what I mean. Like it's not, these matches are, you can finish them in 5 minutes. Like, if you want to get in, like complete an objective and be done, you'll be done in 5-10 minutes. Or you can go into a map with a friend and be like, oh, let's just like hang out and explore and like find stuff and be in a map for 45 minutes, an hour. And that is a really unique space in a game like this. So.
That's cool.
I'm enjoying it. I need to spend more time with it, obviously, but like, it's bright and colorful. The characters are really great. There's a lot of racial diversity inside of the characters. There's not just like, it's not like, oh, there's eight characters. There's four classes that all have a bunch of different variations of the characters with different skills and stuff. And the characters all smile. Like, that is like such a small thing, but they all have grins on their faces. They're bright and like hopeful, and it communicates a lot, and it's nothing that I would have expected to come out of Epic. So, that's my little rant on Fortnite.
I want
to
try it.
I'm going to keep you Yeah, there's lots of loot, lots of card pack opening. Except instead of card packs, they're llama pinatas, and you hit them. It's good.
That sounds satisfying, sure. Actually.
Yeah,
a little bit.
Yeah, it's a low energy game. Urian in the chat, Urian86 says, "Ugh, I kind of need a low energy game, but the damn price. Yeah, it's a little expensive. I bet it goes free to play. Maybe wait. What else have people been playing?
Yeah,
if anything.
What else? Oh, sorry. What else? I want to tell you about a little game. Mm-hmm. I played a little game today, in fact. And it was from the Resist Jam, actually. That was a
awesome.
Resist-themed, you know, political action-basically-themed game jam from a couple of months ago. And it kind of tied into some of the things we've been doing, some mm-hmm. of the prison state stuff. It's more the surveillance state than necessarily mm-hmm. just the incarceration side, but mm-hmm. it's all part of the just umbrella
the
criminal justice
just like focusing
and
on
surveillance.
Yeah,
and
exactly. Categorizing
watching.
Bodies and, yeah,
exactly,
watching people.
Exactly, exactly. Yep. I'll just briefly say it's called Freedom Through a Lens. And what it is a little first-person narrative game mm-hmm. where you are a photographer. You go to a protest.
What was it called one more time?
It is called Freedom Through a Lens. I'm okay. making sure I'm getting it right because it is like, yeah. So you're a photographer. You go to a protest and you're talking to various people at this protest and asking – you're basically a photojournalist, a freelancer, and asking them, why are you here? What's going on? What are you doing here? Can you give me a quote, basically? Mm. And then you take their picture with their face blacked out so that there's no way they can – be incarcerated for what they've done and being at this protest. And it's just like a cool little exploration of what it is to go to a protest, why various reasons people go to a protest. Really cool little free thing. You could download it like this second and play it
nice.
In 10 minutes.
That's like two
it's
things.
Rad.
That reminds me of two things. One, I think that we do on the site that I don't know that a lot of people know is we just curate a list of free games that you can go play. There's a – if you go to waypoint.vice.com/freeplay. Is it two words? It's a hyphen. There's a hyphen.
Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
It's a hyphen, yeah.
Or if you just go to waypoint.vice.com or waypoint.zone, you can click on the little links in the top left and then go to play and just find a list of a bunch of free, interesting games that you can go play. So that's one thing. The second thing is I want to shout out our forum members right now because they have been doing all month a Waypoint, an unofficial Waypoint game jam, which haven't had time to like check out any of the prototypes or any of the things yet. But I'm super excited. That's at, if you can go to discourse.zone to visit our forums or forum.waypoint.vice.com. There's like a thread. It's called New Jam City, the unofficial Waypoint game jam.
It's a great logo.
It's a fantastic logo. and it's like 77, you know, things long. I'm super excited to dig into these. I think we should do a stream on some of these.
Yeah, we should.
It's only going on for a few more days, unfortunately. We should have shouted this out much earlier, but sometimes we are incredibly busy, and that's a problem. So check those out. That would be really great.
Game jams are great. That's my opinion.
Yeah. Rob, have you been playing anything else?
I'm playing a little game about a remorseless horde in the service of a truly evil cause that's cloaked in high-minded ideals that are all hollow. Fighting against a poorly led but passionate group of people with right on their side, but whose inexperience may work against them.
So the funny thing here, Rob, okay.
So which party
this
of
is
American
the thing,
politics are you describing?
Can I guess which one you're talking about? Because I have two...
Think about that.
Mm.
There are two games on my list that this could be, and I don't know. I don't know if you're describing Ultimate General Gettysburg or Darkest Dungeon.
I'm describing Ultimate General Civil War.
Oh, Civil War, not
Ultimate
Gettysburg.
General Gettysburg.
Sorry.
Darkest Dungeon, I think, is a little too...
Because what you just described is still that.
Yeah, although there's a central leadership to Darkest Dungeon that I think is a little bit... I don't think that maps quite as well.
It depends on how cynical you are about the Democrats right now.
Yeah.
Like, you know, that's all. But no, I think you're probably right. So Ultimate General Civil War?
It's really good. It's a really fun Civil War game. It's got a great set of historical battles, including some stuff you don't usually find in a Civil War game, but like, it's a really good introductory, like, Civil War war game. You sort of just click and you sort of select your forces, click them anywhere on the map. That's about it. The thing you need to know is troops in cover take damage more slowly, and they maintain the morale. If morale dips too low, they run. So it's all about conserving basically the physical fatigue of your troops, and then they're like courage.
That sounds way simpler than the thing I thought it would be. If I'm being fully honest.
It's like somebody looked at Sid Meier's Gettysburg from way back in the day was like, what if we made this simpler?
Interesting.
And that's kind of what they did. It's a great looking game, has a gorgeous art style.
Oh wow, yeah, I'm looking at it now.
Totally. Yeah, the downside with it is that I think once you've learned how these scenarios unfold, they tend to get a little rote, and you sort of solve them, and they may not be super replayable.
Can I ask you what you think about that really quick? Like, I don't play a lot of historical war games. I have, like, occasionally in my past, but there are so many conversations around war games that I think are fascinating. And one of them is, you just said, like, oh, you solve these encounters. You solve the basic structure of encounters. And I'm always curious what people who play war games think when it comes to kind of historical accuracy, the ability to quote unquote solve a combat encounter. I think we've talked about this briefly before, but like the division between games that are trying to simulate history and kind of say, this is how things turned out for real. The Allies pushed in on D-Day. They successfully, you know, came through the beaches. They took losses, but they moved in and managed to create a front for a new assault. Versus people who are like, oh, I want this game to be balanced, and that means that the Germans, that the Axis powers should be able to withstand that attack if only they'd solved it right. Or, you know what I mean, the division there? Where do you come down as a player on that? Or do you not come down? Do you just like everything?
No, I definitely have a preference, and it's definitely I do not like things that are super solvable. And that can mean a few things. Like, any scenario-based game is going to have an element where, like, you get familiar with the parameters of the scenario. Maybe there's a few variations that can crop up, but, like, you learn different approaches that can work or not. Like, eventually, you're probably going to solve that. Where it tends to get a little tedious for me is where, like, solving it just means learning where everything is at and the order in which things will happen.
Right.
And I think Ultimate General Civil War errs a little bit on that side. Like, once you've been through a scenario once, you know when enemy reinforcements are going to show up, you know where they're going to show up from. And once you know all that stuff, you can just start anticipating it. There's nothing in the game that prevents you from abusing that foreknowledge. Mm-hmm. And I think that ends up working against the game. But on the other hand, there's a lot of scenarios. You know, you'll get through all of them at least once or twice with each side. You'll have a good time. It's just, it prevents it from becoming sort of one of those infinitely revisitable classics that you come across. So I generally like things that are a little more dynamic, that can throw a few more twists your way. Mm-hmm. Like, something that Sid Meier's Gettysburg did that was really smart. So everyone basically, like, if you're even casually in history, you roughly know the outline of the Battle of Gettysburg. If you know war games, you roughly know the outline of the Battle of Gettysburg. What Sid Meier's Gettysburg had was the option for certain variants to pop up, if I'm remembering this correctly. So, like, on the first day of Gettysburg or something, you know, the first corps is supposed to show up between, like, you know, 9 a.m. and noon. What if they're late? What if they don't show up and the Union cavalry is just hanging out there, with their hand in the vise, basically? What happens then? That could just happen while you're playing the scenario.
Right.
And then you're on a different scenario, basically. You have to adapt to a completely different set of circumstances. That's the kind of stuff I love, is that variability.
Not many games have that variability. Then is, like, grounded in something other than just tactical play. It's grounded in, what if the historical circumstances shifted? What if, you know, XYZ happened? That then for this moment, the stakes had changed or the resources available had changed, instead of just like, oh, I was better at this. Like, if only the smarter general had been there, they could have upset the thing. Not that's not there too, to some degree.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Where do you think this is, like, a weird pivot, which is, like, how do you think games that are not historically based, how do you feel about those? Like, Darkest Dungeon is a game that I played a lot of. I don't know if Patrick or Danielle, if you've played any Darkest Dungeon, that game is really good. is a fantasy game. It's like a cosmic horror, like you're delving into dungeons, you're fighting, you know, bog hags and other creatures. There's magic. It's the sort of magic that is terrible. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's a game that actually does feel like magic is bad in a way that lots of settings that say like magic is bad, they don't actually communicate that mechanically. Whereas in this, it's like
magic is awesome.
Yeah. They're more like magic is awesome. But in Darkest Dungeon, magic's bad.
It sucks.
Even when you're using it for yourself. But also, I'm curious there, like, do you feel when playing games like that, like, I don't want this to feel solvable. I don't want to find an optimized strategy. I don't want to find, like, the one true way forward. I want things to be contextualized when they go weird, or do you have more wiggle room there?
I have more wiggle room, but I also just am a huge goddamn hypocrite. Like, that's the other part of it.
We're all hypocrites.
It's like, I want, like, yeah, I don't want to solve this game. I don't want to identify my optimal strategy and have that just work time and again. So the game's like, cool, I'm going to throw this really unexpected curveball at you and force you to sort of think on your feet. And I'm like, how dare you? how dare you use mind control or something like that? I think where stuff like that stays interesting is, like, if you can prevent people from having the same strategy work again and again and again, force them to keep adapting it. And I think Darkest Dungeon is very clever about this in that it, because you can very rarely run the same party composition in mission after mission, you are forced to recombine the different pieces of your army, as it were, and find the different synergies that are created there, or the different vulnerabilities. Sometimes you get through a mission, you're like, man, this party does incredible, like, chain stun damage. It's unreal. And then at a certain point, you remember, oh yeah, this party can't like heal effectively at all.
Yeah, no, that's the thing with Darkest Dungeon is like, you can totally build a team comp that is just not, it's wrong. Like, oh, I could maybe eke out a really streamlined short mission, but I literally cannot do 80% of the missions that it gives me. We're just not built for it. Sorry, I was distracted for a moment because I got very curious to see if Darkest Dungeon was out on iOS or on Switch, and it's not yet.
Oh.
But, like, both of those are things that might happen, but, like, Darkest Dungeon
would be such a good iOS game.
It'd be so good. Oh, God. Anyway, strategy games are interesting.
I want to play one day.
We
Rob
have to
and
find
I are going to need to stream.
We have to figure out a strategy.
The General and the Ensign. I don't even know.
General
and
the Ensign.
Enlisty.
Those are private, ranks.
Those are ranks in different,
private,
different.
I know.
Completely
I realized
different
that.
Branches.
The rear
I think
admiral.
Are
there ensigns?
And the ensign.
I think there are army ensigns.
Are there
it's
army
not
ensigns?
Just a navy thing.
Huh.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, there you go. The army
See?
Ensign.
See, I did
go.
It.
That's good. I'm glad for you. I don't know that it's true. I just did a search. I'm not. No.
Well, not in the U.S. Army.
Oh, in an army.
I am saying there have been armies
somewhere.
Where...
Yeah, well, there's been everything in an army somewhere. Like, there's been a lot of armies.
Okay.
Admiral and Ensign.
Thank you.
Okay? Can we,
there we go.
We
go
need
with
to
that.
Find whatever that game is.
Let's go with that.
We should play more Stellaris together. That was fun. All
that
right.
was really fun.
We should, actually, what we should do is probably take a turn into the question bucket. I need a number because it's a Friday, and Fridays are days where we go deep into the question bucket. But we're running out of questions. We might need to spend a day of just refilling the bucket. Like, we're down to 60 odd questions now.
Back
60
bucket.
58 questions.
Very nice.
Just give me a number.
Look
from
at
1
us.
To 58.
Let's go with the amount of calories that are in ketchup servings. 19.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate
very,
it.
Very, you know, I.
Rowan.
Just a random number.
Writes in. Rowan from Auckland, New Zealand, not Rowan Kaiser. Says, hey, having finished the Titanfall 2 campaign, it felt like a great example of gameplay and mechanics overcoming an extremely generic story. Of course, this isn't new, but are there many examples of a game that you enjoyed because of its great story, despite its mediocre gameplay? Thanks, Rowan, Auckland, New Zealand.
I didn't play it, but Nier is like the quintessential example of a game that has like objectively awful gameplay, but a story that is wild and worth getting through.
Yeah.
Nier Automata, which like it starts strong from a gameplay perspective and then just
then,
becomes kind of repetitive in a way that it just doesn't kind of keep pace with the story. They diverge at a certain point where you're just kind of clamoring through the combat just so you can see what happens next. So I think it's worth it, but I like the difference between the quality of the story in Nier, the original Nier, and the quality of the gameplay is a lot is very wide. It's the Grand Canyon in that game. It's a lot closer in Nier Automata. That's the example that I'm trying. I can think of a game that I played.
That's the question. Like ones that you played and actually finished.
Yeah.
You?
Well, I didn't finish it, but Last Guardian is like absolutely.
You didn't finish it. Like that's the key of this question.
All right. Let me think.
It's like, what did you push through? Rob? Anything?
I completed The Witcher 1. Look, and there's some people out there who are like, oh, I didn't like the Witcher 3 combat. Like, it left me cold. You don't know shit about bad Witcher combat. Like, you don't know what just a soul-crushing grind witching could be.
It's bad. I tried. I tried really hard multiple times, Rob.
They built that game on, like, a hacked-together, modded-up version of the Neverwinter Nights 2 engine.
Oh, that makes
which
sense.
Which is pretty wild, but, like, The Witcher 1 just had really kind of crap combat. It was good at evoking settings, but like the battles themselves were really kind of excruciating, and eventually like you were just glad you could get your Witcher all drugged up so you could just like plow through those encounters. But the story was really, really good, and that sort of dichotomy existed from the first. The opening quests are your standard like terrible village quests in an RPG, like there's a bad plant in my garden and everything. But
what was that?
One more time? What?
No, seriously, there was somebody.
Who was that? Who was that other person?
Who was that voice?
I don't. Do we have a fifth person? Natalie, is there a fifth person?
I didn't hear shit.
Oh, it's that ghost again.
Oh, the ghost?
Yeah, the ghost from our stream on Friday.
Okay.
Ooh. Not Friday. Well, yesterday. 2 days ago?
Wednesday.
I don't know what day it is. This is what happens when you spend your nights on an ambulance sometimes, okay?
Oh, boy. Oh, brother. Okay.
Well, this week has been like 2 years long.
Yes, it has.
So, longest week.
You know, last year when we streamed.
But yeah, so like you got this classic village quests where people are just giving you what seems like busy work, and one of them is this little dude being like, there's an evil plant in my backyard, and you got to deal with that shit. And then the game reveals the kind of world The Witcher actually is, which is a fucking horror show. And I got addicted to that, and it forced me to plow through what was otherwise a pretty awful game in a lot of ways. But I was in it for the village gothic, the murder corpse brides.
Yeah.
All that stuff.
That's interesting. Actually, the quintessential answer to this for me is Deadly Premonition, which is probably the answer for a lot of people.
Sure.
A game that is no fun to play, and if you made the mistake of starting the difficulty on normal instead of easy, woe is you, because the combat is just terrible in
the
that
combat
game.
Is not good. I played with a FAQ, which means that probably my experiences doesn't count.
That's the way to play that game, if
but
you
it is.
See all like I beat it and then realized how much I missed, and I should have played it
yeah,
with
you
a
should
FAQ,
have,
so I
dude.
Could have seen a lot
there's
of
like,
the strange
well, like,
stuff.
Only because even that game is a game where you can there are things that you can get that are way off the beaten path that make playing that game easier, like fast
the
travel.
Radio.
The radio
yeah.
is the big one, right? Mm-hmm. The radio is the one that's like, if you don't get that radio, you're going to be in that car nonstop forever. Like, even with it, you're in it a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, that might be one. I need to figure out if I ever want to go back and play Deadly Premonition again. I beat that game years ago and really loved it and have grown a lot as a person and have sharper beliefs about the representation of people, and there are some real fucking bad characters in that game. And also, it is a deeply warm game, and it is a game that I really respond well to a lot of the characterization. But it's one of those ones like I know if I go back, I don't. It's going to be a hard pill to swallow.
Came out at a time too, when there wasn't
but
as
that's not
much.
A great excuse. I don't
I'm
know.
Just saying there wasn't as much that was that warm and personal
right.
feeling.
Yes, I see what you're saying.
You know, during
it felt
what 2010,
so, yeah.
2011, I.
Somewhere in
I don't
there.
Know the exact
Somewhere
year,
in
but
there, for
there's
sure.
been more games that cater to that taste.
The thing that always comes to mind when these sorts of questions come up to me is like, oh, adventure games are that, because you're just playing for the story. Like, oh, Walking Dead, blah, blah, blah. Like, but the thing that I think is always missed in that conversation is that the narrative design of those games is the gameplay.
Right.
We don't think about narrative design as being like combat, but it is also a craft. It is also like a set of skills that is about prioritization and pacing and all that stuff is balanced and is designed in the same way.
Knowing the objects, totally. And knowing the things you can interact with, totally. Is knowing that world and
absolutely.
Knowing those characters.
Yeah, and those things I think are always under-expressed as being mechanical. People like draw that line between mechanics and story, and adventure games are actually like this very core important part where you should be thinking about story as being mechanical. So, anything else? Any other ones?
I hate Mass Effect.
Yeah.
Mass Effect? What?
You're wrong.
Oh, come on. The gameplay's not that. The combat in the first one is kind of mediocre, but
it's never that good, though. Like, the first one I dragged myself through, but even after getting over that hurdle,
it is the
like,
best story of all three games.
I totally agree.
It does.
Wait,
I think we all agree, actually.
I know this was the three of us, but, like, pre-Rob this came up, and I revealed myself as a Mass Effect 1 is the best truther.
It's the best one.
Yeah.
For story.
I think it's... I like 2 a lot.
I love 2.
Love 2. But 1's my favorite.
Yes.
1 is the one that, like, deep inside...
I think
1
is maybe the most memorable of the game.
1 is one of the most memorable games I've ever played, let alone mm-hmm. one of
but
the most...
But the combat... It really is a question of the combat and the story had this insane inverse
I like the combat in 1 fine, but that's just... That's who I am.
Yeah, it's true that the universe propelled me
forward. I just feel like it really did get... smoother playing, and the story got less interesting. Like, it was that weird inverse relationship.
Totally. I will say, maybe part of it is just, like, I always played characters who were really... I play a Vanguard in all the Mass Effect games, and Mass Effect 1 as a Vanguard is, like, right down the middle at, like, the perfect blend of difficulty and like, ease, because Adept powers, Biotics, are way overpowered in Mass Effect 1. And also being a Vanguard means you're up close, or like you get a shotgun and a pistol. You don't have an assault rifle. And the assault rifle is the worst to play with in Mass Effect 1 because you're just like, blah, shooting forever and bullets are just hitting and not doing anything.
Yeah.
Maybe. There's no, and so like playing with weapons that are like very up close, powerful weapons meant, I guess you do still have a, no, I think you don't. Anyway, I like Mass Effect 1 a whole bunch.
It's real good.
Rob, you're a Mass Effect 1 guy?
Oh, yeah, for sure. It's like, it's kind of a long road to get there, but it has like the best third act. It has one of the great gaming third acts ever.
Oh, my God.
By far the best third act of a Mass Effect game.
She's sovereign. Ugh. What a moment.
Meanwhile, Mass Effect 2, which I do love and I think could have been better, Mass Effect 2 ends with like, what if you fight a big metal skeleton? Does that do anything for you?
And it's I'm a skeleton jazz wizard.
Contra 3, The Alien Wars is a great video game, and they just wanted to shout out Contra 3 from the Super Nintendo. God damn. Anyway, I don't know, like, the actual truth for me is, like, I often don't like game stories. Like, there are a lot of game stories that I think are bad, including ones that I used to think were really good, and it is often the case, more and more, that I'll like elements of a story, or I'll like a style of characterization or tone of a game. I people were passing around my 2014 Giant Bomb Best of list today, in which I read about Fantasy Life. I don't think Fantasy Life has like a good story, but I think that there is, again, a warmth to it. There is like a surprising amount of thoughtfulness when it comes to questions of ethnicity and nationality in that game. But I don't think that like the moment-to-moment storytelling is good. And that would never, even though I love that game, that's never going to be the thing that carries me through, even games that I love. And I think that that's partially just because like I get stories in other places. I tend to go to other places for really well-written stuff, which doesn't mean that that stuff can exist
in
games.
So one could almost say that video games are better without stories.
I knew that was coming. Bullshit. I knew it was coming.
No.
I was like, who's going to say it? Who will say it?
I think there's 2 different claims there. One is a historical claim, and this is the problem with the Bagos piece. We're fucking back in it. We're just in it.
I didn't mean to do that.
We're doing it.
A historical claim in which what you say is AAA mass market video games have bad stories. Check. Video games as a medium cannot tell good stories. Bad.
Not check.
I was going to say X,
check.
But that still fills it in, and I don't want a situation
no
where
check.
People think that I've X equals a check. I don't know. I'm going to eject. I eject away from this.
Unchecked.
I'm going to uncheck my way away from this Bagost conversation. Otherwise, we'll just be here for the next hour. I think that's going to do it for us this week. I got out of that question without answering
it,
so that's
good.
I'm glad
nobody said Soma.
Oh, Soma might be the right answer, though.
Soma is a good answer.
No!
Soma's a good answer.
No!
Thanks for bringing it up, Danielle.
Yeah,
gameplay in Soma?
I do.
You like running from those shitty aliens?
Bad.
Look, there's some
or whatever they are. They're not aliens. They're not aliens, I don't think.
Anytime
they're
you
not.
Encounter a creature in that game, it grinds to a halt.
It's frustrating. but I don't want to throw all the gameplay into one fell swoop.
There are other things there.
There's other things. There's some puzzles that I like. I think they bring you into the environment really nicely. I'm not going to fight you on the encounters. They are a little annoying. I just don't want to say all the gameplay sucks in that game.
I will say all the gameplay sucks in the Zero Escape games, 999, VLR, Zero Time Dilemma. The
Dying
puzzles
Reborn.
In those games, just fucking, if I could have played a version of them without them, I would have. I played.
Right.
It's the only time I've played three games in a row with a walkthrough sitting next to me because I wouldn't even dare try the puzzle. I would just look up the solution and do it because the puzzles are so bad in those games. The people that, if you're one of those people that actually sits there and do it, I feel bad for you. There's something wrong with you. You should get it checked out. And you should just not do that to yourself.
Some people love puzzles, okay?
Bad puzzles. They're bad puzzles.
Are you sure you're not bad at puzzles, Patrick?
No,
think about that.
I've got a puzzle table in my house. I can't be bad at puzzles. I have
a puzzle table.
Yeah, we put together jigsaw puzzles. We have a table dedicated to
the jigsaw puzzle table. What? Yeah. That's cute.
Do you like Banjo-Kazooie a lot?
I mean, I do, yeah.
It all adds up. It all adds up. All right. On that note,
there we go.
We're going to wrap up.
It was a happy note.
I'm Austin Walker. You can find me on Twitter at Austin Walker. Nope, at Austin _ Walker. There it is. It's one of those weeks.
Yeah, it does.
Danielle, where can people find you?
Danielle R.I.
Rob Zachney.
At Rob Zachney.
And Patrick Klepek. I'm very close to this microphone. I don't know why I'm doing this.
You're going to fall asleep a little bit there on that mic.
It's Friday. We have a few more hours.
It's almost
done. We have like two more hard edits to do today.
Two more hard edits, and then we're doing it.
I think they're both coming together. You can find everything we do at waypoint.advice.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/waypoint. That's right, right? That's okay. One of those weeks. Facebook.com/waypointvice, youtube.com/waypointvice, and at twitch.tv/waypoint. Make sure you come to the website this week to check out some of the articles we've run. I'm really proud of the stuff that we've run. Somebody joked, this is my birthday week this week, that like I got myself a prestige journalism feature series. Like, oh, what awesome. What did you do for your birthday this week? Oh, I commissioned 10 to 13 stories about the prison
Gitmo
culture
and games,
Gitmo
yeah.
and and the carceral state. I paid Cameron Kunzelman to write me a piece about whether or not we could imagine a world without prisons. That's what I did for my birthday. That's pretty good. Yeah. All said. So check that stuff out at waypoint.advice.com. Shout outs to Natalie Watson, at Natalie Watson, who is manning the production staff board thing. The Wirecast, that's the thing it's called. Shout outs to Tim Barnes, our producer for Waypoint Radio. Follow him on Twitter at TimBarnes451. And you can check out the music by Boen, who's letting us use his track Miss You off the EP Pale Machine at waypoint.zone/BOEN. That is going to do it for us. Before we go, what is it that we tell them, Danielle?
Be good. Be good at it.
Peace.
This Mother's Day, treat mom to healthy, glowing skin with Osea's limited edition skincare sets. Osea has been making clean, seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. Their advanced eye care duo brightens and firms skin around your eyes, while the Golden Glow Body Trio nourishes and smooths skin all over. Go to oseamalibu.com and use code MOM for 10% off your first order site-wide.